Well, Jimmy, first of all, congratulations on your book, Memory Men. Was it difficult to do, and how long did it take to do it?
It wasn't difficult to do. It was difficult to edit stuff as I went along, because I have a mind full of useless information. But I tried to include some funny things that happened to me in my life, some nice people I met, some good places I've been in. And, of course, it's laced with sadness too, because of the death of my mother, my wife, my sister and my son. So the big four all went and left me. But however, without valleys, you don't have mountains. So that's the way it is.
I found those chapters, the two chapters, Jimmy, about the deaths of your family, I found them difficult to read, and they must have been very difficult, brought back a lot of memories to you. But isn't it lovely to have the opportunity to remember those people?
Yes, it is. It's lovely to do it. Another person I remembered in the book is my dad, who died when he was 43. I mean, it's very young. You know, when you're young yourself, you don't think 43 when you're a child. But now I realise, God, dying at 43. But he did so much. There's something in the book which I've written about. Before rural electrification, we were living out in the heart of the country in Louth, and nobody had any electricity, of course. It was paraffin lamps and coal fires, if you were lucky to have coal. But my father built up his own wind charger. Mm-hmm. And I see them around the country now, different style. But and we had electric light in our own house. Yeah. And I say in the book, I never told him when he was alive that he was a great man. And he was a great man.
Well, we all have those. Yeah. We all have those regrettable memories, Jimmy.
Yeah. And it's usually about your parents. You never tell them.
No.
People who love people never tell them they love them. Generally, except they're going with each other, courting.
And very sadly, your wife died suddenly then, and then your son, Lartimer Sinem, he had a very debilitating disease. All those things, Jimmy, did they take a lot out of you physically and mentally?
They took a lot out of me at the time, but I'm a very positive person, I have to say, in my own favour. And my glass is always half full.
Yeah.
It is really, and it's a good way to work, and I know it works. If you get up and get out, and so work has been good for me. Work is relaxation, it's therapy, really. I found the death of Paul very difficult. A young man, I'm not going to go into the motor neuron thing now, but the last thing that goes is your brain. So you know everything that's going on. And a couple of months while he was still able to speak, in his last few months, he couldn't speak at all. Or move his hands, or his feet, or his eyebrows, or anything. The only thing he could do was smile. And if you told him a story which he thought was funny, he'd smile. And if you wanted him to say the word yes, he'd smile. He had nothing for no. And that was, it's in the book too, but one day I went into him and he looked a small bit grumpy, which he used to be. And I engaged him in conversation. God, I said, Paul, I wish you could reply to me. I know you can hear me, and he smiled. That meant yes. And I said, what's wrong with you at all? And I went through all the things. Is your back sore? Are your knees sore because he had operations with the football? Are you hungry? Are you thirsty? Not in the room. Nothing, not a sign. And then I said, don't tell me you want your head scratched. Big smile.
He did, yeah.
And all he wanted was me to rub my finger through his hair and scratch it.
The fact of watching a loved one suffering is nearly worse than their death itself, Jimmy.
It is. It's much. You never said a true word, or you have it spot on. It was unbelievable that he was there doing his best to keep contact. And he was a fit man. Like up to the time of his incapacitation, he was playing 5-handicap golf. He was playing over 45s football. He was a serious athlete at the time. But you're quite right, seeing them die is awful.
You have travelled the whole world, your sporting capacities are endless, but the one thing that comes shining through, and even up until today, is boxing. And of course, I'd say the fact that you were in London for Katie Taylor, has it crowned a boxing career for you?
It should do. I hope it will be recrowned somewhere along
the line. I'm not saying now that you're finished, Langton Jim.
No. But somewhere along the line. You see, Katie went to London as probably the best known Irish woman and least seen. Everybody was in her corner, so to speak, and wanted her to do well, but didn't really know what she looked like, apart from an odd photograph in the paper. And certainly they didn't know how good a boxer she was. And then she appeared in London. And everyone was saying, gee, this girl can really do it. And of course, as you know, she went on and won the gold medal. And as I said before, only for her, the chances are that women's boxing would not have been on in London. It might have made it in Rio, but because of her performances around the world, the IOC decided to go to women's boxing. So it was absolutely poetic that she won the gold medal, and she was brilliant.
It must have been a memorable experience to be there. While we all watched it in the box, Jimmy, everyone that was there will say that it was something special to be present.
Special is no word for it. It was fantastic. And the XL Arena turned into a little Ireland. The place was jammed.
How would it rate, that particular event, how would it rate in all other events that you have been at?
It was so emotional. It was right up there with, I'll tell you what it was right up there with, which is a very good question, the day Carruth won the gold medal or the day that Barry McGuigan won the world title. And if you put it to other things, I suppose it would be right up there with any of them that I've seen.
Yeah.
It would be right up there with Kilkenny winning this All-Ireland. So every year it appears. I know it's not every year. Oh, Kerry winning every... But it's funny, isn't it? The two great counties, Kerry and Kilkenny, and the respective sports, couldn't make the Golden Five in a row.
Isn't it?
Yeah. It shows you how difficult that was or is.
Yeah. The one thing, Jimmy, that came shining through in the book, Memory Men, was your travelling. You simply love travelling, and you've been all over the world, and the book has come shining through. You were here, you were there, you were catching a plane here, you were missing a plane there, and you were travelling here and picking up a connection here and setting up a connection there. Is travelling a big part of your life, and have you loved the travelling?
Love travelling. I love it. I loved geography at school, and now travel, of course, is living geography. And I enjoy going to places. I say in the last paragraph in the book, what next? I'm going on a farewell tour.
Yeah.
And this farewell tour will include great events I've been at in the past. I want to revisit, like the Tour de France, like the Masters at Augusta, like the Kentucky Derby. I want to go back. And I also want to go to a few places that I wanted to go to in my life and haven't been. And all this will culminate in the Olympic Games in Rio in 2016. And maybe then I'll think of some other scheme to keep me going for another few years.
I must put it to you, Jimmy, you mentioned Lance Armstrong in your book and you talk about his greatness and everything. But maybe, is it since the book was published that things have changed completely for Armstrong and with now that he has been accused and of all this drug taking?
Yes, he let me down, I have to say. I thought... He's had more tests than any other man in existence. So I thought he would have been clear of all. It's a big shame, really. For young people particularly, not for me, for young people to think that this heroic figure could win the tour seven times and at the end it's dust.
Because he was a worldwide... He was like Muhammad Ali. The name was up there.
He was up there, of course he was. And all the people who would swear by him.
Yeah.
But now we're let down. I hope it doesn't fall into anybody.
Doesn't say much for the testers, Jim.
It doesn't say much for the testers. It bloody doesn't.
Why, Jacobs, if you or I went to the doctor and we were tested, they wouldn't really find out what's wrong with us.
You know what I find is strange? This American thing, which is in law as well, where you can plea bargain.
Yeah.
And you blow the whole story and you plea bargain. His whole team have done that.
They
spent their time with him in the US. This is not condoning his behaviour. But I'm merely saying this. He was in the US postal team of which he was the leader. And all of them were earning $500,000 a year from him.
Yeah.
And they took the $500,000 and said not a diggy bird.
Yeah.
And now when it's all over, they're all opening up and plea bargaining, so they're not fined.
Yeah.
Now I think that's despicable as well.
Yeah. Who were your five greatest world sporting figures, Jim, and you got through a lot of them in the book. I must tell the listener that this is fabulous reading. Who were your off the top of your head?
Muhammad Ali,
yeah.
Pele, Carl Lewis, Jack Nicklaus, and probably a whole medley of Irish footballers.
Yeah.
Gaelic footballers who would be way up there with the ball. But of the more recent, in case young people think that I've stopped living, I haven't. because it'd be hard to beat Messi and Ronaldo.
Yeah.
Lionel Messi is an absolute genius.
Is he the best ever?
No. It'll be Pele or Maradona. Maradona won the World Cup virtually on his own for Argentina. They're the poorest team in 78. Yeah. Pele won the World Cup when he was 17. And Messi has not as yet done that. Yeah. But right now he's the Lord of the Rings, there's no doubt about that.
What was the greatest goal ever scored in international soccer?
Oh, Maradona in the World Cup against England.
Yeah.
Not the one where they're still whinging about him handling it. No, the dribble, the fantastic dribble.
Yeah.
But in Gaelic football, there have been some great goals. I know that's your sport, Miss Mossy.
Yeah.
There have been some fantastic goals. I've been putting a few of them together. There was the goal that Maurice Fitzgerald scored against Armagh, I think it was, when he soloed with one foot without breaking stride or checking stride, hit it with the other foot. That was a marvellous goal. There was a wonderful goal that Owen Mulligan scored against Dublin for Tyrone. The double dummy. Was a great goal. Let's see, what are the... Cooper. Cooper scored a goal a year and a half ago at Croke Park, where he was hemmed in. He was right almost on top of goal, and he swung out and made a new wider arc to find the spot in the net. I mean, that's pure genius.
Yeah.
If he were born in Barcelona, Madrid, Gooch Cooper, he'd be the greatest footballer of them all.
Yeah. You mentioned Maurice Fitzgerald there, and he's going to be launching my book very shortly for me, Maurice, and I'm very privileged to have him. But left and right, and he was the world free-kicking champion. What had he, Jimmy? How special was Maurice Fitzgerald now that we're looking back because his career is over?
Maurice Fitzgerald was one of the greatest footballers I've ever seen, in any code, not just Gaelic football. Because, as you say, he could kick effortlessly with either foot. He was a beautiful feeler of the ball, which he did particularly in club football. But because of his lazy type style, he was far from lazy.
Yeah.
It was so easy to him. He could just seamlessly move into a move, and he'd have the ball in his hands and his little hand to toe, and he could pinpoint passes. He could pass as accurately and as often as the great Sean Purser.
Yeah.
He could catch balls as high as the best of them. And his kicking was beyond reproach. It was fantastic, really.
Your top five Irish sports people, Jimmy.
Oh, God. And this includes Gaelic Games.
You can include anything you want. Stay outside the Gaelic Games.
I'll stay outside the Gaelic Games and say possibly Eamon Coughlan, Ronnie Delaney, Katie Taylor now, I think.
Yeah.
Has to be considered. Barry McGuigan has to, be considered. And the golfers, there's a heap of golfers now.
Yeah.
As regards our own games, our national games, well, I know Ring was great, and I know Mackey was great, and I know Jimmy Doyle was great. But has there ever been anyone better than Henry Shefflin? I doubt it.
Yeah.
I mean, his record stands up. And in Gaelic football, I don't think I've ever seen better all-round football than Jack O'Shea. I think forgetting it, keeping it, kicking it, scoring with it, he was hard to beat.
And the highest scoring midfielder in the history of Gaelic football was Jack O'Shea.
Was he?
That answers your question.
Ask me, I'm surprised.
That answers your question.
Ah, he was one, like he could do everything. He came back to the 50, 45 metre line to receive from the goalkeeper. He looked up, that his familiar look up, and he could hit it. I think he was the longest kicker of a ball out of hand I've ever seen, and accurately.
Yeah.
Would you agree he was marvellous?
He
was at the end of one of Kerry's great moves. That started with Jimmy Deanahan and ended with Jack putting on the net.
What a goal that was.
That was a great goal.
Jimmy, you say in the book that you enjoy living on your own now.
I do enjoy living on my own.
Yes.
I'd like to live with somebody else, but I enjoy living on my own.
Yeah.
I've got over the loneliness of being a widower, and I'm happy enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Was your biggest problem writing Memory Men, leaving out stuff or what to put in?
Leaving out stuff. In fact, I thought of so much stuff since that I might do another one. No, I won't do another one, but I have. Yeah, I'm happy enough.
You're here in the Killarney Bookshop today, Jim. You're here in Kerry. Do you like coming to Kerry? I know that you wanted me one time coming down and we did the Terrace Talk special here in Kerry. Do you like coming to Kerry?
I love Kerry. Kerry. I was reared in a place called Cooley in the Cooley Peninsula in County Louth, where last Sunday... 28th or 29th of October, whatever date it was, they had their 125th anniversary dinner. They had a great dinner, a great gala ball, and I was the speaker at it. And one of the things I was able to tell them was about the Cooley teams of the past, my past. But they wore the Kerry jersey. That was the fantastic thing about it, Cooley and Kerry. And the story was that it was Kerry who copied Cooley. Rather than the other way around. Same thing, same situation, the green and the gold hoop. So Kerry was always part. I mean, when I was growing up, when I was a baby man, they used to be talking about fellas like Jock Yohann and Paddy Kennedy and mm-hmm. Pat Garvey and Eddie Dowling. That's just the guys that we're talking about. Yeah. The same as young people today are talking about Colin Cooper and Peter Canavan. Now, what a player he was, mm-hmm. talking about great players. Mm-hmm. But so Cooley and Kerry. Cooley should have been in Kerry, really. That's all I'm saying to you.
Yeah. You're busy now, Jim, with the book. You're going on doing a lot of signings.
Yes,
and do you like that type? Do you like this type of thing moving around?
I don't dislike it, but the travelling is a bit tiring, all right.
Yeah.
I'm certainly tired today after coming back last night.
Yeah.
However, that's all part and parcel.
Finally, Jimmy, your favourite sports. I get by reading your book that boxing, and I love listening to your commentaries in boxing. Would boxing be your favourite sport? Or what would be your number one favourite?
If I were put in the witness box in the greatest court case of all time, and I was asked what was my favourite sport, I would say without fear of contradiction, Gaelic football. That would be my sport. Were I to be offered a job as a commentator and pick my own thing, I would take Gaelic football. Secondly, I would take athletics, track and field, then boxing, then soccer, then everything else down along the line. But I would be happy with lots of things. Mm-hmm. Cycling, even without lamps, whatever.
Yeah.
It's a great life.
Does religion play a big part in your life, Jim?
I'm not religious in the sense that I'd be talking about it. Yes, I do. I am religious in the sense that I keep the commandments, or try to, and I regularly attend Mass on a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I wouldn't miss more than 5 Sundays in a year.
Yeah.
So that's, I suppose, not bad, is it?
What does it feel like being an icon and a legend in your own lifetime?
Wish I have no idea what it's like, because I've never reached that, and I never will.
Well, with that, we leave our listeners be deciding otherwise. Jim, listen, it's always great talking to you. I always find when I meet you and talk to you, I come away with a spring in my step and feeling better.
Wish you, thank you.